This is a recording of Dr. Tom Roszell for Sunday, September 6th, 2015. You can listen to this program live every Sunday afternoon from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed on this program are not the views of 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Dr. Tom Roszell live right now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Roszell Live. This is Dr. Tom Roszell live in studio, waiting to take your phone calls on any aspect of healthcare that you'd like to talk about. But we're going to do it from a natural point of view, from chiropractic, acupuncture, nutrition, you know, all those things that you didn't really know a whole lot about, but you want to figure out neurological implications in the body and so forth. That's why we do Dr. Tom Roszell Live. We're here at 888-630-9625. 888-630-9625. Happy Labor Day weekend, everybody. Hope you're out there having a good time and enjoying the weather, because it is nice. It really is a beautiful weekend. What a jump start we have. Next week it gets a little hot, sticky, and so forth, but nevertheless, get out there and enjoy it while you can. 888-630-9625. If you have a problem and you've, you know, kind of searched all over the place trying to figure out what to do about it, trust me, this is the place to figure it out, and this is the place that you ask the questions, and we always point you in the direction that will be helpful and useful. When you want to find me when I'm not in studio, you can do that simply by going to drtomroselle.com. That's drtomroselle.com. Alternatively, you can go to rosellcare.com as well, and we will respond, I promise you. Sometimes a little sluggish, takes me a couple, three, 4 days, but I will get back to you. If you need to talk to one of our staff members and get some answers quickly, you can do that also by just calling, and just go to 703-698-7117. So let's talk about a few things, and one of the things I want to talk to you about today is the concept of integrative therapeutics, right? In the marketplace today, you're hearing all about, you know, these medical homes, and, you know, it's a springboard off of the Affordable Care Act, which all of us have our positions on, and I've been lecturing throughout the country, bringing information to doctors all over the place on the Affordable Care Act, and most of them don't want to hear what I have to say. And I said a long time ago, unless there's a dramatic shift, it's not going away. You may be able to shift pieces of it, but I don't think we're ever going to see it totally eliminated, not for a whole lot of years, simply because of the fact there are too many people that win with this situation. So you need to know stuff. And the things that you need to know are embedded in the concept of integrative therapeutics relative to preventative health care and wellness care as it's defined within the Affordable Care Act that we're sitting out there. And I don't want to belabor this. I just want to kind of touch on it for you and let you know what's coming about. So in a medical home is where there's a group of doctors in your community, and it's going to start shifting to this. And, you know, one's an oncologist, another one is a cardiologist, another one's a GP, another one is a does physical therapeutics and so forth. And then they're going to give these areas, these medical homes, a lump sum amount of money to take care of you. And so you go to this medical home, this defined group of physicians that are going to be part of the group of practices, the hospitals and so forth that take care of you, and they get X number of dollars. And they don't get more if they see you 150 times or they see you twice. They just get that amount of money. So you're going to have the ability to do that as well and sign up for these medical homes. So what I purport to you is this, is that there's going to be an incentive or a disincentive, if you will, to see a patient more often if they need the care, simply because of the fact that in our society where, you know, we'd like to get reimbursed, it's not going to be there. Now, altruistically, I understand how this model is set up. I understand, and having been in practice 39 years, my basic headspace in my heart goes to the place of that there's nobody that should be denied basic medical care. We are human beings. We have an obligation, at least we're, from my platform, to take care of people when they have a problem, when they have a need. But having said that, there's much more that needs to be examined above and beyond. So an integrative therapeutic practice, an integrative healthcare practice is a group of physicians, doctors, osteopaths, chiropractors, dentists even, medical physicians of all different makes and models and so forth. And the concept is one-stop shopping, that you're going to be able to see these people. But the problem is that they're not necessarily in one facility. They can be all over the place. And you're going to have to go to wherever. Well, you know, Dr. Jones, who's your medical internist, if you can get to see one, by the way, after this goes into full effect in 2016, most of them are going to be nurse practitioners and physician assistants. Then they're going to assign you to go see this person who specializes in that. Now you got to go to their office, and then all the records are going to be transferred. Now, what they've done to ensure the availability of your records is they've created something called a portal. And that means that you can go in and your doctor can go in and see all your medical records. So no matter where you've been and who you've seen, they're all going to be online. So you're going to have an access code for you to be able to access from your computer to go in and see what's written in your charts. That's a good news. All of you should. You come to my practice, you ask me for your records, we give you your records. There's, you know, well, there should be nothing to hide there. The years you've paid for them, and you should be able to have them. But the other piece is that anybody in the healthcare arena that you have gone to then can go back and judge and take a look at your records and so forth. There's a few nuances that have to be worked out, but it's called a medical portal, and you're going to hear more about that as you go to your physicians over a period of time. So we're dealing with this integrative care practice, this group of physicians, and they're going to say to you that, well, we have everything that you need within one place. And but your choice then is not as great as being able to select and go to where you want to. Many of you are finding it out now that a lot of doctors are backing out. They're going into concierge medicine simply because they can't afford to be in practice this way. You come to our practice, and we have a natural integrative practice. We have chiropractic applied kinesiologists. We have functional medical nutritionists. We have massage therapists. We have rehab. We have traditionally trained acupuncturists and so forth. And when we look at a case, we look at the patient from a multidimensional point of view. But in doing that, we try to prescribe the best therapeutic treatment in one site, and we do it simultaneously, not fractionated over a period of time, also employing education that is substantive and supportive to that patient, so the patient then can become part of the process, that they can shoulder responsibility with us. And that's the way it should be. But unfortunately, there is going to be capitation. In my opinion, the winners in the Affordable Care Act are going to be the drug companies, simply because of the fact that you're going to have high access to different types of medications and so forth and take this. What is going to be capitated is procedures, and because procedures are expensive, because they're time-related. It's easy to do a diagnostic. Now, I went, and you're probably asking, why am I talking about all this? Well, I went to a program last week, and I was down in Orlando, and it was the Florida Chiropractic National Convention and Exposition. And there was about 4,000 plus people there, and it's one that I teach at on a regular basis. But this year I just went because I needed to get my continuing education credits, but also the fact that October 1, across the board in the marketplace of healthcare, it doesn't make any difference what kind of a practicing physician, doctor you are, that we're switching diagnostic coding. The codes are going to go from something called ICD-9 codings to ICD-10 codings. That's part of all of this, but you have to remember this Affordable Care Act has springboard off of many other things, some of it coming from implementation overseas where there is socialized medicine, where there's single payers and so forth. And a lot of it has sprung off by guidance from the United Nations and their healthcare organization. So now you have these ICD-9s that will be ICD-10 codes in October, starting October 1st. And by the way, the rest of the world, except the United States, have been using ICD-10s now for quite some time. Now, altruistically, it is going to be very specific relative to condition. So you go to your doctor now, and you say you have a sprained whatever. It could be a sprained neck, sprained back, sprained joint. Now with the coding, the old codes were numerical. Now these are alphanumerical, and there's going to be situations. I mean, there's even a code now. There's like 90-some thousand codes for a space debris dropping out of the sky and dropping on your head and causing you a problem. There's actually a code for that. And the code is significant. So if you going back to the sprain of the joint, they want to know what joint it is, what specific tissue it is, what ligament it is. And in that you say, that's great. I mean, we can be real specific. Truthfully, it is ultimately, but in the short run, it's going to be very difficult to implement because the diagnostics have to be supported by the examination. So the doctor now has to have very specific criteria relative to examination. And guess what? There's going to be a ton of things that are going to be ordered and diagnostic testing and different doctors are going to exchange and so forth to make this happen. So at the end of the day, now, am I telling you it's good or bad or indifferent? Let's just say that I have my trepidation. I have my tongue is being bit very hard, and I'm saying, okay, let's see what happens 5, 6, 7 months into this relative to the cost of what we need to portray. So that means that some guys are going to say, well, you know, it's just this, and it's mild this, and they're going to whatever. So I don't know, but I want you to know. I want you to make sure that you're aware that these things are in place. So let's get back to that integrative care model, because that's important, because you're going to see more and more of it. You're going to see more people say we're an integrative care wellness model. But what does that really mean? In all the instances, you know, there's someone that is going to be the number one director, usually, generally. If it's huge, like an ANOVA or something like that, you're going to have departmental directors that are supposedly being guided under this umbrella. So, you know, this person basically makes most of the decisions. Now, if you have a medical director or a medical person, regardless of what their criteria or credentialing or background is within a group of natural therapeutic practitioners, guess who gets to make the ultimate call? It's the medical director. And that's just the way it's set up under most states. And you have to remember you have 50 different ways of implementing this, because the states, at the end of the day, have the capacity to alter, change, tweak, determine how these things come back. But the practice will employ all kinds of different people. So what's the benefit? Well, the benefit generally is that doctors in an integrative platform are looking at a model of check and balances. And they're going to say, well, we don't need to do this. Let's do it together. Let's do it in this way. And it can make maximum application of medical decision making for support of the patient and being able to help that patient along the line. The negative is that in many situations, it can increase the delay in the correct processing of this patient. So there's a lot of things that are coming down the pike that are good, bad, and somewhat ugly. It has to be done to the place where the patient truly is the centerpiece of this whole thing. The patient centered relative to decision-making processes, what's best for that patient, what is the best support. Going back to our model of structural, chemical, emotional, looking at the nervous system, biochemical system, the emotional system, and how do they come together? How do they work? Body is a system. The body is not individual compartmentalized entities. And that's how that has to be looked at. So we're here to educate you, to make sure you understand that you must get up to speed on what's coming down the pike. You must educate yourself. You must work with people who have the capacity to help you be the driver, the director of what's going and what's coming. You know, listen, that's why I wrote my book a couple of years ago. It was called Ageless Health, Health is a Do-It-Yourself Program. Still available, still online. And that's why we do our annual Ageless Health program that we're going to tell you a little bit more about when we come back. But anyway, stick with that for a second. We'll be right back after these important messages. Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle live, as you do every Sunday, same place, same time, right on that dial. Tell your friends about it, because I want to educate you and everybody else so you can make your decisions relative to your health and really understand it. So, you know, you should not be an automaton. You should be someone who can weigh information and understand the pros and cons of what's being told to you. You know, we're duped all the time relative to how we're pre-programmed to answer our healthcare questions, and you know, the unfortunate White Tower MDD attitude. Again, it's an old expression, but simply it means this, that just because there's a doctor out there and you can put any doctorial on this thing, that you say, yes, doctor, well, you know, my patients don't say that to me. They ask all kinds of questions. And I want you to ask those questions as well, because it's important. By the way, I want to give you a little bit of information on vitamin D3. And there's been some interesting articles. One was recently released in the Mayo Clinic Proceedings, the journal Mayo Clinic Proceedings, and they did a whole bunch of analysis. And this was over 20,000 patients between 2011. And it took part in a project that was brought about by Rochester Epidemiology Project of Minnesota, or in Minnesota. And here's the analysis. Here's the final thing. Many people are afraid to take vitamin D, or their doctors tell them, you know, don't take vitamin D because it is toxic. You can, you know, you get up. Well, the toxic level is a level that maintains itself over 100 nanograms per milliliter. And that's really what's high. And the point of it is that what they found is that they evaluated studies as well as this study and showed that the majority of Americans have very low vitamin D levels, and subsequently the problems that we've talked about on this program, from osteoporosis to cancers to heart disease to degenerative disease and so forth. And despite this, these research, you know, look at, if you will, what they found and what they were doing specifically. They wanted to see if this was a bunch of junk and poppycock, as a lot of people will say. But here's the deal, is that despite the increases in the use of vitamin D across the board, toxicity is like ridiculously rare. And, you know, a hypercalcemic situation or high blood calcium can occur where there are very, very high levels of vitamin D in the blood. But it doesn't happen that often. And, you know, they tell you it can lead to kidney stones and so forth. It almost never takes place. Not never, but the point of it is that I won't worry too much about it. You have a better risk of something happening. You just, you know, walking across the street at a stoplight. So, you know, take what you see, do the research, but don't just take one piece of research, do it across the board. I want to talk to you with this short segment, by the way, and encourage you to call 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Let's talk to you on whatever you'd like to talk about today. I'd like to talk to you about something very special. October 17th, Ageless Health 2015. Many of you have been to our Ageless Health productions over the years. This is the 15th year that we're doing this formally. And we've done seminars continually and in the past and so forth. And these are blockbusters. They're attended by a couple hundred plus people. We have vendors there that are in the natural therapeutics arena, and some other folks that you should have direct interest and observation of. But this year, Ageless Health 2015, we're calling it the Brain-Body Connection. And the reason is simply this. In our practice, we've been looking at the nervous system for many years, and the nervous system is king. It runs everything. Obviously, without the physiological connection of that 6 inches between your earlobes, nothing else works below it. But it is susceptible to so many different things. So we're going to take it apart piece by piece by piece and reassemble it in a way that you can use the information to make huge differences in your health and your immune function and your capacity for longevity, but at a very high level, not just to live longer, but to live well longer. Dr. Browning, who you've heard many times, and I lovingly call Dr. Browning the professor, he's going to be talking about the brain is moldable, it's plastic, it's malleable, and it changes with any kind of environmental stimulation, which is important. You need to understand that. You know, years ago we thought that the brain only had so many neurons, and that if you kill them off with, you know, alcohol, whatever, it didn't regrow. Today we know that that's not true. We know that the brain redevelops itself over time. We're going to talk about, you know, the different aspects, how exercise affects it. We're going to talk about something called psychoneuroimmunology, the brain's effect on the immune system, and how acupuncture affects the brain and energetics, but more importantly, how nutrition and exercise, things that you can do immediately, will make huge differences in how your brain functions and communicates with the rest of your body. We're coming up to a break. Don't go away. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell live, as you do every Sunday, bringing you the most intimate and updated information on integrative and natural therapeutics. Love to talk to you. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. That's how you find me. And how you find me when I'm not here is drtomroselle.com. That's drtomroselle.com. And give us a call or send me a note or, you know, whatever we can do to help you. Listen, I want to talk to you about a subject. And the subject simply is the use of nutritional supplementation, you know, for preventive healthcare, provocative, get better type of stuff, right? So I don't think there's a day that goes by in my practice that somebody's not asking me, well, what can I take? Well, the thing that is, there's not an absolute, if you will, recipe book of take this and you're going to be great. Needs of things change. And, you know, although it's true that small amounts of, you know, certain types of nutrients can be used to treat certain deficiency states, like, you know, if you want to go through the disease states, you know, things like rickets, you know, it's almost unheard of anymore, scurvy, beriberi, pellagra. I'm listing old conditions that in some undeveloped areas we see, but rarely anyplace else. You know, marginal health is associated with marginal nutrition, and unfortunately it's prevalent in today's world. You know, we see our foods are being modified to the point where there's very little support and there's very little nutrient value. I kid all the time when I go overseas and I go to, you know, some of the back areas, food tastes different there than it does here in the United States because of the hybridization and all of that craziness. You know, nutrients that are not essential but are valuable, you know, are one of those things that we get from our foods. Essential, your body produces them providing it has the right building blocks. But things like, for example, carnitine and L-glutamine and arginine and so forth, these things increase the transportation of oxygen and healing of tissue and making your body run better and so forth. You get all those from your food. But unfortunately, foods are deficient, and we're having more and more of a problem as time goes on. I'm going to get to that. I really want to go through that and give you a couple examples of what you need to look out for because this is important. But in the meantime, Maria, how can I help you? Thank you for holding.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, I don't think I've ever heard this discussed before. I want to know about what the good, bad, and ugly, if you can, of very low systolic, that the upper number being in the 90s or 80s, literally, in an 80-year-old pacemaker, not an exerciser. What is the good, bad, and the ugly? Nobody really knows.
Well, they do know, but they're ducking their heads. So here's the thing. Particularly as we get older, our blood pressure should be slightly higher and for good health. And a lot of the guidelines for blood pressure are outside good health parameters, and the guidelines are being perpetuated by pharmaceutical companies and people who are being funded in the back door. If you've ever heard me say, you know, when you see an article, when you see anything that doesn't make sense or somehow gets you stimulated, ask a question. Ask, you know, who wrote the article? What do they have to be gained by, and who wrote the check for it, right? So when it comes to low blood pressure, somebody who's of that age group with low blood pressure, that's as unhealthy as someone who has high blood pressure. And when I say high blood pressure, I don't get excited until somebody's north of 145. And as long as their diastolic pressure, the lower pressure, is under 80. Because the upper pressure is the amount of force that the heart has to use to push blood through the vascular system. The lower pressure, the diastolic pressure, is the relaxation of the vessels after the heart contracts. So you want to make sure that there's not a continual amount of tone or stress within the arterial system after there's the push. Sometimes the body has to push harder because we're not exercising, because we have a little bit too much weight on us and things of that nature. But you have to take blood pressure first of all at the same time every day to make any kind of determination. If you walk into my office and we take your blood pressure and it's a little elevated, I don't get nervous about it simply because you just walked into my office. You know, it's new to you. Your stress level's up a little bit. We do blood pressure differently. We take it in positions. We take it sitting, then we lay you down and we take it again, then we stand you up and we take it again, because it's the shifting of the blood pressure in the different positions that tells you more about what's really going on within the body. So let's get back to the low blood pressure when you're that age. If there's a pacemaker, it may be overregulating. If there's medications that are involved in addition, they can drop the blood pressure to a place where there's no contractile function within the system. Magnesium relaxes the vessels to the point where it should drop blood pressure down. Calcium that should be transporting into the system. You can have a blood test that says you got normal calcium, but if it's not getting into the tissue, then the muscular system is not going to have any tone. It's going to feel flaccid. It's going to feel weak. So the bottom line is that it can be controlled by that. The nervous system is involved in this. The heart has three primary neurological inputs. It has the pacemaker, it has nerves from the thoracic area, your back where the ribs come off, and it has neurological input from the vagus nerve, which is one of the primary cranial nerves, the longest one in your body, as a matter of fact. And if these things are being irritated because of structural imbalances, because of misalignments and so forth, the heart is going to respond, but it can respond hyper, where the blood pressure will go up. It can respond the other way, where the blood pressure will go down. So you have to take into consideration all the pieces that are there, the medications that are being supplemented, and also any nutritional products that the patient might be taking. So,
I understand that the medication, there's no high blood, no medications except for this very bad medication, digoxin. And digoxin is given because of the low blood pressure.
Correct.
Anything like beta blockers, other things like that will lower the blood pressure, but the digoxin apparently doesn't, but
sometimes, Maria, sometimes it can have a paradoxical reaction. If you go in and you really look at the interaction, again, you have to look at the person. It's not a broad brush, but this much I can tell you. Low blood pressure at your age, if this is about you, is not healthy. Anything?
No, I know it's not healthy, and I wanted to know the worst for somebody about someone else, and I thought, well, the heart was just giving up. That was my...
It can.
Educated opinion.
You have to look at coenzyme Q10, which runs the mitochondria of the heart. If it's at a low level, you have to look at the mineral balances of the body. You have to look at a lot of different things, as well as amino acid balances. So, Maria, if I can be of further help, please let me know. I'd love to go over this with you because it's unsafe. It's not at a place it should be. And could there be cardiac failure? Look it up. Obviously, you're educated. And the short answer is yes, it could be. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Talking about the use of nutritional supplementations, and it's important that you understand the difference between those things that your body makes and those things that you have to get through nutrition. Nutrition starts with the type and quality of food that you put in your body. It must be qualitative. If you're eating all the things that are hybridized and GMO products and have tons of pesticides on it, you're causing deficiencies while you're trying to support it. We are in a fast food, junk food expert society. It means that everybody's out there, catch as catch can. We're grabbing this, we're grabbing that. Years ago, we put iodine to support, but now we have bromides in it. Bromides compete with iodine, so it shuts down thyroid function. There's a lot of things. I mean, we could spend days on this subject, but what I want you to know that increasing numbers of studies that are out there now are confirming that high doses of nutrients, therapeutic nutrient values, have nutritional therapeutic value. But you have to pick them specifically. You can't just throw everything at it and say, hey, listen, I hope this sticks and makes me feel better. There's basics. There's the ACEs, A-C-E and selenium. If you don't have enough selenium in your body and you happen to have cardiovascular problems, you're not going to repair as quickly as you should. Okay? Supplementation of vitamin C. It's known that vitamin C is necessary for helping you prevent all kinds of viral insults in your body, increases immune reaction. But there's another piece, by the way. If you want vitamin C to help you with allergies, you got to take it at a certain level. You have to take at least 3,000 milligrams a day. At lower levels, vitamin C at 1,000 milligrams doesn't work. Now, why? And don't take it all at one time because it's water-soluble when you're going to urinate it out. But here's the deal, is that it stimulates the activity of some of one of the white blood cells called a neutrophil. A neutrophil goes into action when you have any kind of allergic response. Now, you can have a lot of them and say, oh, my God, I got a ton of them there. But, you know, it's you're still suffering. Take it up to 3,000 milligrams. The activity of the vitamin C will be much, much higher. Mike, how can I help you? Thank you for calling.
Doctor, I caught a news flash. I didn't get the source of the study, but there was a study released midweek that said that taking one aspirin a day would help prevent cancer, different kinds of cancer. And I don't know if you had seen that study or knew about that study or had an opinion on it.
Yeah, actually, I have, Mike. And what happened is that it came out after a year ago when the FDA had to backtrack on a study that they said that vitamin or aspirin would help heart disease and so forth. And, you know, the National Institute or Cancer Institute came out with the article. I'm pulling from memory at this point. And, you know, they said that there's recent studies on aspirin that, you know, suggest that the drug may actually help lower the risk of dying from cancer, not preventing cancer. And I'd have to go back again. I said it was all done. It came about a U.S. task force study with it. I read all the time, and I remember this about 2-3 weeks ago. It was followed up on some work that was done several years ago. And basically, they said that in a randomized, clinical sampling, that what they saw that if you use aspirin, you had something like a 15% better risk of preventing death. Well, you know, it wasn't, and it was specific. I remember it was for colorectal cancer and also the things that relate to lung cancer and prostate cancer. So I'd have to go back and be very specific about it, but I do know that that did come out. But what they're doing is these studies are put out there by the people who are producing the aspirin. Bayer is one of the ones that funded it, and they got their hands slapped really good last year. And the FDA had to do a 180 and say, you know, aspirin does not help cardiovascular problems. It actually enhances the problem. It increases the risk of not only heart attack and stroke, but it also, by the way, increases the risk of certain types of cancers as well. So it may help you from not dying of the cancer in about 15% of the cases, but it also will increase your risk of contracting certain types of cancers. It also rips the stomach lining up. So now you have a greater exposure to bacterial infections and things of that nature. So I will go back and I will be much more specific about the information, and you can either write me and I'll send it to you, or on one of the next shows I'll talk a little bit more about it. But Mike, thank you for bringing that up. I really, really appreciate it. Gerald, how can I help you? Thank you for calling, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How can I help you, sir?
I have a question about muscle twitches. I started experiencing some rather pronounced twitching in one of my legs. And it went on for a few days, and then ever since then, it seems more frequent all over the body, you know, eye, arm, chest, you know, and nothing extreme, but very noticeable. And my biggest concern, as I did a little bit of research, was the fact that my mother died of ALS, and that seems to be an early symptom, not exclusively, but again, it could also be something nutritionally related. What are your thoughts?
You'd like to know whether to worry about it. I get it. So here's the deal. Muscle twitching that is random, it shows up on your face or in your shoulder or in your leg, and then is there for a while, then it goes away. Or even if it's slightly persistent, is not necessarily an alarm. But if it's happening all over the body all the time, it may be. So here's what you have to look at. It can be a mineral deficiency or an imbalance. It can be neurological insult. The nerves of the spine, particularly the upper portion of the neck, can be irritated because now you got this long coaxial cable called the spinal cord that's going to affect everything. And if it's not sending signals properly, the muscles can go into that type of problem. If there is a blockage of calcium in its transport and it's not linking up the way it's supposed to, it can cause a problem as well. But here's what I would have you do. Take about 700 milligrams of magnesium glycinate divided into three dosages throughout the day, or even 600, 200, 200, and 200, and take CoQ10, coenzyme Q10, take about 600 units a day, 200 three times. But again, go to the health food store and tell them you want the best source that you have.
Yeah, and, I do take CoQ10. I'll have to check what the dosage is.
Okay, but do those two things. Get it up there. If you're having, if you know you've had any trauma, any injuries to your body, you know, make sure you see somebody who deals with those kind of things, either, you know, somebody who does my work or a good acupuncturist or whatever, and give yourself 6 weeks. If within the 6 weeks that begins to diminish and goes away, then you know it's due to those things that we're talking about. If it doesn't go away, now it's time for a neurological consult.
Okay.
Okay? So
tell me again, what was the mineral you recommended?
Magnesium glycinate.
Okay,
okay, because what does is it balances calcium out, and it transports it the way it's supposed to, and it's one of the most deficient nutrients that we have in our body. We just don't get enough of it. So give it a try. Let me know how I can help you. Just send me a note at drtomrozell.com. But 6 weeks from now, if you're still having these global twitching, you need to get a neurological consult, Gerald, and don't hesitate. Make sure you get it done. We're coming up to break. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. There's a couple more of you sitting there. I'll try to get to you when we come back after some very important messages. You can always call me at 888-630-9625.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You've been listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live every Sunday. Same place, right up on your radio dial. Make sure that you join us and tell your friends that this is an important program. This is one that gives you the information that you need to have to change your life in every possible way. We're always found at 888-630-9625, and you can get a hold of us by email, drtomrozell.com or rozellcare.com. You can call the office, 703-698-7117, and just tell my staff you'd like to talk to one of our docs, and they'll get back to you and help you in any possible way that they can. Don't forget, October the 17th, Ageless Health 2015, Brain-Body Connection. It's a day you really don't want to miss. This is one that you want to bring a lot of people to. And by the way, if you bring two people, there's a discount for that. There's a discount for that. Go online or call my office and tell them that you want to register two people, pay for two people, and you'll get a discount. Plus, by the way, if you register online, you get a discount for registering online. So how can you beat that? Do that. Register at least two and then get the discount from being online. I promise you, it's a day that's going to be one that you're going to apply and be able to help yourself, your family, and live longer and live well. It's, you know, this is a win-win-win situation. Buddy George, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Dr. Rozell, good to talk to you again.
How's it going?
Good. I got a question for you. I was reading some things on the internet. I came across this product called Tamarack. Not the first time I've heard about it, but supposedly it's good for everything. Do you have any feelings on that?
Turmeric is a great product. It's been used for literally thousands of years, and it goes back to the Indian culture over, you know, the other part of the world. Turmeric has a very, very potent anti-inflammatory property to it. We use it in our practice, have been since I've been in practice, and there's concentrated forms. There are products that aren't worth even putting out there. But how it works is that it's a COX-2 inhibitor. And what COX-2, if you've done any reading at all, causes high response in inflammation. You get hurt, you get injured, you insult your body with, you know, either a stress pattern or injury of any kind, and these COX-2 elements go crazy in the body. And what turmeric, by the way, and turmeric is broad brush. The active ingredient is something called curcumin. And what it does is it potentiates the transportation of omega-3s in the body. And it works the way that I just told you about. So it's the documentation on this stuff is really great. The problem is that a lot of people become sensitive to it. We use it with our Alzheimer's patients and our Parkinson's patients and anybody who has neurological pathway problems and even people who are in constant state of inflammatory response problems. There was an interesting study. And again, I'm going to pull this one out of the back of my pocket a little bit. The Alzheimer's disease in India is much, much less than what we have here in Western culture. And the parallel seems to be because they use so much turmeric in their diet. And they're talking about 25 to 30% less incidence in people who are, I think it was above 70 years old, as compared to this country. The experimental models that that they're using to show what it actually does shows that curcumin can actually break down and destroy the amyloid plaques that cause the Alzheimer's and the old age dementia, and even as far as Parkinson's and MS and so forth. So when you combine, and we use it, we combine turmeric or curcumin, if you will, with high levels of B12, particularly the hydroxy form of B12, and NAC and the mouth and the tongue are getting tied up today, and other substances that will help transform the brain and remodel the brain, and we're getting some amazing clinical results. But everybody's out there. It's, again, I'll go back. It's an omega-3 booster. It's used in the body to convert more usable forms of DHEA and EPA. All of them are key building blocks in brain function. Cognitive function and depression seem to go away when those are more biologically active. So, you know, here's where turmeric basically comes in relative to, you know, what I can glean at this point to just give to you, is that it allows the omega-3s to be transported and convert into DHEA in the brain. And subsequently, what happens is the inflammatory levels go down and the amyloid will begin to break up. So that's where its value comes in, and also as a global anti-inflammatory. So, George, I hope that helps a little bit. It's, you know, it's one of those things that we could talk about more, but unfortunately I can't. I only have about 25 seconds left. And, you know, again, I got to dust off the brain every once in a while just to remember these things as you're asking the questions. But I try to give you the most effective answer that I possibly can. We're coming up to a break, and we'll be back next week, same time, same old place, giving you more information. And we'll be talking about something that has to do with the brain next week. So kind of put that in your pipe. See you next week. Bye.